Morning, church. For those of you I haven't formally met, I think most of us have met. My name is Dave. You guys hear me fine? Good? Yeah? All right. As you may know, Scott is on a well-deserved vacation, and he made the call to the bullpen. And I was a part of the regular rotation a few years ago, but I've had a lot of life happen in the past few years that I've had to focus on. But here we are. Now, the next couple weeks, Brad, who is not here this morning, we're going to be doing a little collab, and we entitled it God Provides, and he will be up here next week sharing examples of just how, in fact, God provides. But this morning, I want to do something a little bit different, and I promise it will all tie together, but I want you to humor me, and I want you to kind of play along. You see, our world right now is a little chaotic, right? Feels like somebody has just turned it upside down and shaken it. And a lot of crazy things are going on. Plus, energies are kind of high because of a certain game that's happening later on tonight. But I think we need to kind of stop and take a little rest. And what better place to do it than in God? Now, I want you to go on a little journey with me. We're not going very far. As a matter of fact, we're not physically going anywhere. We're all going to take a step into our minds today. Now, don't panic. We're not going to the deep, dark crevices. I'm not going to hypnotize you, and you're not going to wake up with a weird, quirky new habit. We are just going to go on a little guided meditation for something to do. And if you fall asleep, I won't take any offense. I'll know that you're resting in God. But I want you to go in your mind to your inner sanctuary, that inner safe haven where you go to just sit and quietly listen to your thoughts. It's a place you go to contemplate really big life choices, to meditate on things. It's where we go to daydream. You remember daydreaming? It's also the similar place where we go when we read our Bibles or when we pray to God. It's where we can finally go and let those defenses that always seem to be up in our minds, those fortress walls that are always up, we can just finally let them down. And we can just emotionally let it all hang out so we can sift and sort. Now, I learned when I was young that it is very healthy to assign this place in our mind a form that is very pleasing and comfortable to us. It is that place where we can go, where we can be safe and secure. We can feel that rest. We can feel that peace. And we can emotionally just let it all hang out. And it can take on any form you desire. It could be the house you live in, a house from the past. It could be an old family vacation spot, lake house, beach house, cabin in the woods. It could be a library. It could be a church. And any place that you've ever felt was a little slice of heaven and that you could just stay there forever, I want you to go there. And I want you to spend as much time as you can on remembering all the little details and include all the senses. Because when you do that, it gives your conscious mind something to kind of focus on. It's something familiar, and it allows it to relax, which in turn lets us kind of contemplate with a little more clarity. Now, come, I will show you mine. It may come as no surprise to a lot of you, mine takes the form of an old post and beam barn with a Gothic arch roof, much like this one. And it is amazing. It stands tall. It stands proud because it has stood the test of time. And it is a little weathered. You can see some of the daylight through the cracks. But it is amazing here. You enter through two massive sliding barn doors, and then it opens up all around you, all the way to the 45-foot peak. There are two haylofts on either side that stretch the full length of the barn. And when you enter in, you can run your fingers over the rough-cut beams and appreciate just how much work went into building this place. And it smells amazing here. It smells like a pine forest, a stand of pine and cedar combined after a heavy rain, combined with freshly turned soil. And it's actually some of my favorite weather here. It's gray and overcast, and it has a slight drizzle that creates a beautiful din on the metal roof. There's a breeze that blows through the pine trees that surround it. And then the only other sound is a radio, somewhere lost out back years ago, being buried under mental junk because it's a barn. And let's be honest, we all kind of have some mental junk in there, do we not? But This is where I go to kind of escape and listen to my thoughts. And I want you to go to wherever it is, a summer camp, wherever it is that you can just finally listen to your thoughts. And I want you to imagine yourself walking into this place. You walk through the entrance, and right to the side is a series of hooks and a bench, because we can check our spiritual armor. You know, those 60 pounds of weights that we put on every morning from Ephesians. Let's leave those right there. We don't need them in here. However, when we turn back around to go through back into the harsh light of reality, we will need to put them back on. But as you step in, make sure I'm going the right way, please mind the piles. That mental clutter I mentioned before, that mental junk, we all seem to have it, because every morning when we wake up, we have a laundry list of things we have to achieve, accomplish, remember, keep straight, times, dates, arrivals, obligations, meetings, all that stuff just piles up, does it not? And so we just fling it into the front where we can quickly run in and grab it and pull it back out when we need it. But we're not going to sort through that this morning. We're not going to sort through it because, first of all, we don't have time, and second of all, I don't have the credentials. I just want you to brush some of it to the side. And we don't need to move much, just a walking path, because we're trying to get to the back. We're trying to get out back. But as we come in, you're going to notice some bigger stuff. These are the things that kind of happen to us on a daily basis. That constant, steady stream of social media and news, of wars, natural disasters, political chaos, civil unrest, all that stuff that just completely floods us. Let's kind of tiptoe around that today. Let's not touch any of that. It's best left undisturbed because it could collapse at any point. Because again, we're trying to make our way to the back, out to storage, where the memories are. Now, my storage room is in the upper right hayloft. This would be to you towards the back. And it's an interesting room. It's somewhere between a library and a hardware store and a tool room. Because in storage, up front anyways, I have kind of stacked up a lot of different odds and ends and trinkets and tips and tricks and tools of the trade that I have picked up over life. Diagrams, how-to books, stuff, life lessons that was either taught to us or we learned along the way, and we picked them up and said, that seems useful. I'm going to put you on the shelf right here so I know where you are and I can run back and grab it. But as we make our way to the back of this room, those tools will kind of disappear and they will be replaced with books and records and volumes of our memories. The further we go back, the further we go back in time. Stuff a few weeks ago, stuff a few months ago, things from before the pandemic, things from before 9/11. As we make our way back, we'll see that there are trophies and plaques interspersed among these volumes. These are our life achievements. They're under spotlights, they're on display cases. We like to pull them down and polish them and reminisce, show them to our friends. These are the stories that we go to when we are with a gathering of friends and we like to swap stories, or when we're trying to make a first impression. But we're gonna make our way to the very back wall where we will come upon a safe door, a big vault door, thick, metal, impenetrable. This is our vault. This is where some of the most impactful, profound events of our lives took place. A lot of them are from our formative years, our childhoods, our awkward teen years, when we finally grew up and figured out what we wanted to be and struck out on our own to chase our dreams. These are the things that really left an imprint on our lives. Now, there's one last little box in this vault, and no, there is not a dead person in here, although inside of this box, it seems a little weathered and beat up, and quite honestly, it kind of seems out of place in this vault of all these special memories. But inside this vault, you're going to find some rocks. This is a certain little boy's private rock collection. But these rocks represent memories of events that are a very different flavor from what are inside this vault. You see, these rocks represent times in our lives when we blew it. These are our mistakes, and they weigh heavy on us, and they're rounded and smooth because they've kind of been rumbling around in our minds our entire lives, because these are the things that we don't necessarily get rid of. They might be some of our regrets. For example, one of mine it represents my 21st birthday. Now, many of you who know my story will know, but for those of you who don't, my 21st birthday was very non-traditional. You see, I spent my 21st birthday as my first day in prison, just up the road at the Wyndham Main Correctional Center. Now, the story of how I got there is a very long and winding one, and if you haven't heard it, someday we'll sit down with coffee and I promise I'll retell the tale. But for today, all you need to know is that I was a bonehead as a teenager once, and I got in trouble. But church, I'm not here to air out our box and dump it out and compare. I'm not here to do that. I want to just point the box out to you because there's a couple of common themes in this box. You see, in mine, I know that there is an overwhelming majority of foolish pride. There's a lot of rocks, a lot of memories, events in my life that can be chalked up to my own foolish pride. But there's another thing in here. It's the times in my life where I stood at a crossroads and questioned things. And I asked myself the question, how will God provide? You see, I questioned whether or not God had a plan for me. I questioned whether or not he had a direction for me. I sometimes even questioned if he was even listening sometimes. But the thing is we are here to figure out just how God provides. And so we are going to ask the question, and we are going to answer that question. And I know when we ask that question is, will God provide? Well, the knee-jerk reaction is to say, absolutely God will provide. Psalm 23 said, my cup runneth over, thank you very much, have a good day. And you would be absolutely correct. It is what we've been taught, and is what we have come to know is true. However, every step of the way, when we come to that crossroads, that one way or another, why do we question it? Why are we uncertain of which way to go? Well, let's answer that question right now. Doubt actually comes from uncertainty of mind. I don't know if you can actually read that. Sure you can. Distazo, a little Greek lesson for today. The dis word is actually the root word of duo, which obviously means two or double, but distazo, the stance, the double standing. You're literally standing and looking at two different directions, and you just don't know because you are uncertain, and you begin to doubt. There were times in my life that I doubted which direction to take, but I also doubted myself and in the ability to take the right direction. But where does that doubt sprout from? Well, I'll put it to you this way. We are a finite people. We have a beginning and an end, whether we want to come to terms with it or not, that serve an infinite God. Isaiah actually tells us a lot about that. Isaiah 55 tells us, make sure it's up there. Isaiah 55 is actually some of my favorite verses. Isaiah 55, verse 8 and 9. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. There was a traveling pastor to my home church in northern Maine when I was growing up, and he put it a way that stuck with me. All of that big universe stuff happening up there doesn't fit into this tiny little vessel down here. Who has given God counsel? In Isaiah 40. In Isaiah 40, I don't think that's up on the screen. No, this one I kind of added this morning because I wanted to find this one. Isaiah 40, verses 13 and 14. Who has measured the Spirit of the Lord? Or what man has shown him counsel? Whom does he consult? And who made him understand? Who has counseled God that he should learn from them? We are a finite people who serve an infinite God. He's a completely different dimension that we can't even comprehend. Now, where was this doubt started? Where did this doubt seed get planted? Well, it got planted in the garden, as in the garden. So let's go take a look at the beginning in Genesis where that seed of doubt was planted. In chapter 3, and we've been there a couple weeks ago, but I want to take a look at it, and I want to give you the play-by-play. Starting in verse 1 of chapter 3 in Genesis, we're talking about the fall when Eve ate the fruit. And it says, "Now the serpent, who was more crafty than any other beast of the field that the Lord had made, he said to the woman," now this right here, this is the devil, this is that silver-tongued serpent, he's digging that hole for that seed. He goes, "Did God actually say you could eat of any tree, you shall not eat of any of the tree in the garden?" And the woman, Eve, she stood her ground. She stood right up to him and said, "Well, this is what God said." She said, "God said, you shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden, neither shall you touch it, lest you die." Eve stood her ground. But that old devil, he knew just exactly how she worked. And he knew that she only knew of one way, and he knew there was another way, so he showed her that other option. And in doing so, planted that first seed of doubt. But the serpent said to the woman, "You will not surely die, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." And then that seed was planted. The dirt was pushed over it. He watered it, and it grew roots. And so then Eve saw that the tree was good for food and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that tree was desire to make one wise. And then there, doubt had taken root. There is a verse in James 1:6. It says, "But let him ask in faith, with no doubting. For the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind." The devil knew that very well. And he created that wind that pushed Eve into that path that he wanted her to go. And the rest, as they say, is history. But we leave ourselves vulnerable when we stand uncertain at that crossroads for too long, just like Eve. And all of a sudden, that doubt will take root and we can figure out our own way. But the good news is that God already knows how to deal with our rock piles of regrets and our pesky weeds of doubt in our gardens. But when I talk about doubt, and I know it's entitled God Provides. We're getting there, trust me. But when I say doubt, is there not a name that comes to mind? Anyone? Mr. Thomas, the doubting one himself. Let's go take a look at his story, because I want to point something out to you that I actually learned. There is more than one flavor of doubt. You have your choice. So we're going to go over to John 20, and we're going to look at just exactly what happened with Thomas, and then we're going to look at what the disciples told him. Now, starting in verse 24, "Now Thomas, one of the 12, called the twin, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, 'We have seen the Lord.' But he said to them, 'Unless I see in his hands the mark of the nails and place my finger in the mark of the nails and place my hand in his side, I will never believe.'" That's a permanent word, never. Now I just want to point out, Thomas had been hanging out with the disciples for quite some time at this point. They were men that he had come to know very well and men that he had trusted. But even their word wouldn't convince him. So then, in verse 26, 8 days later, the disciples were inside again and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands, and put your hand and believe in my, and place it in my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe." Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." And Jesus said to him, "You have believed because you have seen. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." I want you to go back to verse 27 and take a closer look at that. At the end of verse 27, he says, "Do not disbelieve, but believe." These are the two flavors of doubt. There is a believing doubt, and there is a non-believing or an unbelieving doubt. And I'll describe them to you, but we're going to go back to see the believing doubt. Thomas right here had non-believing doubt. He said, "I will never believe." He even said it. It's a non-believing doubt. It's a doubt that's in your mind that has you convinced of something already, and you question it to challenge it. A believing doubt is a little bit different. We're going to go back to Luke and see how the disciples initially reacted when Christ revealed himself to them after he was resurrected. In Luke 24, I'm going to start in verse 41. And while they still disbelieved for joy and were marveling, he said to them, "Have you anything to eat here?" And they gave him a piece of broiled fish. Sweet. And he took it and ate before them. And then he said to them, "These are my words that I spoke to you while I was still with you, that everything written about me in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms must be fulfilled." Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures. This right here is the believing doubt. And it said right there at the beginning in verse 41, while they still disbelieve for joy, their minds were completely blown that Jesus was standing before them in the flesh. If you go back a couple verses, he told them, he's like, "I'm not a spirit. I have flesh and blood." And that's why he asked for some food. He proved to them, "I will eat this food in front of you because I am risen again." And they were just so blown away. They couldn't believe it. They wanted to understand it. And so they had a believing doubt. A believing doubt is a doubt just to learn. Think of it as a kid that wants you to explain something. They already want you, they want to believe you. They just don't know how to get there. And so, Jesus, in their doubt, provided them with the understanding of the scriptures. He opened their minds to understand the scriptures. Believing doubt will help you learn. The non-believing doubt is something you've already convinced yourself of that Thomas had, and it challenged Jesus. You see, that is kind of the answer to that question. How will God provide? God provides despite our doubt. And it's really easy to doubt. It's because he is an infinite God and we are a finite people. That doubt that so permeates everything, that uncertainty of mind, is because we're being pulled in more than one direction at every step of the way. We come to a crossroads. And the thing is, he provides us with that direction. He provides us with that goal. We just have to listen to it. You see, when Elijah had God reveal himself to him, he wasn't in that big wind that blew the mountains down. He wasn't in that big destructive earthquake. He wasn't in that giant fire. He was in that low whisper after all that, and Elijah recognized that, so he covered himself and walked out of his cave. So that's why I went through all of that this morning, because when we calm ourselves, we go into ourselves all the way to our rock collection, all the way to our mistakes and our regrets. Are we not called to cast our cares upon him? So here is the crux. In 1 John, we are actually called to test the spirits. You see, because there are so many false prophets out there, we are called to have a little bit of doubt, but we're called to have that believing doubt. There's an argument that says that Jesus in the other garden, isn't it interesting how everything started with a garden and then restarted in a different garden? It is said that Jesus had that believing doubt when he sweated those bloody bullets. And he immediately turned that doubt over to God, because that is what we're supposed to do. You see, in Jesus, when he revealed himself to the disciples, he knew that they wanted to believe. And so he provided them with the understanding so that they could learn. But in 1 John, it says, "Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God. For many false prophets have gone out into the world. And by this," I don't think verse 2 is up there, but verse 2, "by this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God." Jesus proved that to those disciples in that moment. He proved to them that he wasn't a spirit. He was fully flesh. He was still fully man and still fully God. And from doing so, he helped them come to that understanding. So today, as we calm ourselves, I wanted to go through that this morning to kind of give you a little tool. Because if you can put yourself in a place where your mind is calm and you can listen to that little small voice, I read this morning in my little devotional, my utmost for the Most High, our imagination comes from God. He is the best creator. He created everything. So it is not a surprise that we are a creative bunch. And if we don't flex that imaginative muscle, we'll kind of lose it. But that imagination should be to God. So we envision that sanctuary, that inner haven in our minds, so that we can go and find that small, quiet voice of God.